Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of The Awesome with Cody. I'm your host, Cody. So, we're going to continue the month of May's theme of awesome 80s action movies. A little nostalgia trip for y'all, mostly me, because, you know, I'm the one rewatching them and talking about them. Today's episode is going to be a little different than I planned originally, but I don't think I told you what it was going to be on the show, so it doesn't matter. Don't know why I brought it up. Anyways, today's movie is going to be the action movie from an action movie from 1988 starring Steven Seagal. Yes, that's Steven Seagal. Growing up, me as well as many of men my age, boys my age at that time, were really into Steven Seagal. Early to mid 80s, or actually I should say middle to late 80s, really, because he had a tremendous career in movies, just straight, like, started in 88, and then went through to roughly, I would say, probably the, like, 10 years later, he was still making really good movies, and he had a couple decent ones sprinkled in the early 2000s, but nothing really spectacular after that, and then he became, like, essentially a joke. At that point, but, you know, Steven Seagal, we all know him, he's a fat bounty hunter now, who does that weird, not Kempo, is it Kempo, whatever that weird defensive martial arts thing he does, where he, like, tosses people. Anyways, Above the Law was directed by a gentleman named Andrew Davis. Andrew Davis has worked with Steven Seagal a few times. He did Above the Law, he did Under Siege. He also did The Fugitive with Harrison Ford. He did Chain Reaction with Keanu. Is that Keanu Reeves? And is that the one I'm thinking of? Right? Yeah, Morgan Freeman and Keanu Reeves. Yeah, that's the one. He did Collateral Damage. He did Holes with everybody's favorite nutball, Shia LaBeouf. He did The Guardian with Kevin Costner and Ashton Kutcher in that one, I think, too. I don't remember. I think it's the Coast Guard one. So he's done a few things that, you know, some of you might have heard of. Perfect Murder with Michael Douglas. I forgot that one. That one's in there, too. But Steven Seagal's done, Steven Seagal movies. His earlier ones. So basically, his first, essentially, seven movies, I would say. So you have, Executive Decision will piss Mike off because, like, he's barely in it. But you have Above the Law, Hard to Kill, Marked for Death, which Marked for Death was the movie I was going to watch and talk about. But I chose not to do that one. I went to his first one. Kind of regret it because Marked for Death and Out for Justice are my two favorite ones, but I thought I'd go back to, like, as the first one and be like, oh, and it's a good one. It's one I would always recommend people watch because he's the ultimate badass in that movie, in Above the Law. But Hard to Kill, Marked for Death and Out for Justice are my two favorite ones of his. But so yeah, Above the Law, Hard to Kill, Marked for Death, Out for Justice, Under Siege, On Deadly Ground, which he directed, Under Siege 2, and then, of course, the joke one, which is Executive Decision, because if I'm not mistaken, he dies literally right away in that movie. It's like the first, like, 10 minutes, if not less than that. It's fun times. Good times, you know. Who else is in this movie? Well, I'll tell you right now. Second lead would be Pam Grier. Pam Grier has done a lot of things. Early in her career, she's very big in the 70s. Everyone would probably know her best from the Quentin Tarantino movie, where she played the main, which is Jackie Brown. She was also in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. She played the teacher that was actually the disguise of George Carlin's character in that. So if you don't remember her role, she was the disguise for George Carlin's character, Rufus. She's done a lot of things. She's always in different stuff. But I would say her most prevalent role that most people know is Jackie Brown, where she played Jackie Brown. Early stuff, though, she's known for Foxy Brown, which is the movie that probably majority of the older folks remember her from. She played a character named Foxy Brown. Basically, she out for revenge and blah blah blah. I think it's a blaxploitation movie, but it's still a fun movie if you haven't seen it before. A lot of those movies back then were pretty fun. Blaxploitation movies got kind of like, that name is kind of sounds terrible, but it just means they were made cheap and usually had only all black actors because it would work. They could make it for really cheap because they had no real big names in them. But anyway, so there's a lot she's done. She's been in so many things. But I would say again, her biggest roles: Jackie Brown, Foxy Brown, and of course, Above the Law. I would say her bigger ones. But she's been in so many different things; it's ridiculous. It also has the villain, who most people don't know his name, but when you see him, you'll recognize him from certain things. His name is Henry Silva. He is, well, I don't want to say best known for, he plays a villain in pretty much everything he's in because he has a villain face. And the reason why he's a villain face is because he actually played Red Skull, in the very first Captain America movie. And really all they did, I think, is just give him a bald cap and then paint him red. Because his face is very scary. Oh, and they made it look like his nose was missing by putting like a prosthetic thing on the front of his face. He's a pretty menacing looking dude. But maybe that's just me. I'm trying to find the where is it? Right, was he then? Let me look real quick here, because I know he was in one of these. Hold on, that's not the right one. Was he not the one that played Red Skull in that movie, or is he in a different one? There was so many of these movies that came out and they were all fucking terrible. Hold on, let's see here. That was Scott Paulin that was in that Captain America. Was he in the super shitty one? I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I do know, though, for a fact that he plays a villain in everything he was in. He was, like, the bad guy in the original Ocean's 11. He made a cameo in Ocean's 12, I think. The sequel, when they made the remake with George Clooney and Brad Pitt, they made a sequel, which is terrible. And they made a sequel to that, which is actually much better. But anyways, he was in... he was in that... as the main protagonist in the original Ocean's 11. But anyways, I was wrong about the Captain America thing, apparently. I thought he was in not the one from 1990, but the one from like 80-something, where like the shield was see-through, and Captain America rode a motorcycle, but I could be completely wrong about that too. It might have been a completely different one, but anyhow, I thought that was who he was, but I apparently... am wrong about that. So that's the cat. Well, and oh no, to run up the last of them. He's not a big character. Well, he's a big character in this, but he's not in it a whole lot, which is Chelsea Ross. Chelsea Ross is a gentleman. He's been in so many big movies, but as little characters, but you'd recognize if you saw him. Biggest to me, most recognizable would be Eddie Harris from Major League. He's the veteran pitcher who tries to teach Charlie Sheen's character a lesson. He's always talking about when I'm in a stretch, I reach over here and get Ben Gay and blah blah blah, or isn't it Bengay? Puts the chili pepper in his, chili powder in his nose and uses a snot ball. Anyways, he's also the one who gets hit in the head by the bat when he drinks Jobu's tequila. But he's been in, so obviously he was above the law, Major League. He was in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. He actually played Colonel Oates, who's the, he was the colonel that was at the military school that Ted was going to be sent to. Or was it Bill was being sent to it? It was Bill, right? Yeah, Bill was being sent to. Or was it Ted? I can't remember. He's the one that he screams at him. He's dressed as a military guy. He was also in Chain Reaction with Keanu Reeves. He was in Last Boy Scout, one of my favorite movies, with Damon Wayans as well as Bruce Willis. I would say Bruce Willis is second finest work. Mike's going to hate that, by the way. He was on he was in The Untouchables, very bit part in that. Basic Instinct, he was in Rudy. He was in Primary Colors. So many, he's been in so many movies. Like so many, it's ridiculous. But he's recognizable, but most people don't know his name. His name is Chelsea Ross. But that's it for that. So let me break down this this movie for you a little bit. So it was Steven Seagal's very first movie. He plays a gentleman named Nico Toscani, who is a sergeant and the military for the CIA. But he becomes a police detective. Or Vice Squad, in Chicago, his home, where he comes from, after he quits because he's tired of all the crazy, rotten shit that he has witnessed to is in the CIA because he doesn't believe what they're doing is just. The cool thing about this one is they give a backstory, but they show it. So they use real photos of him growing up, because I don't know if it's completely based on his actual upbringing where he's actually was born in Italy and then migrated over here with his family when he was very young. But they use that as there, and they use photos from back when he was younger. And then talks about how he saw a guy, an old Asian guy, do martial arts, and he blew his mind. So he saved a bunch of money, learned a bunch of the martial arts, became a master at it, and was recruited by the CIA. Who was basically involved in covert operations during the Vietnam War. He then quit because of the crazy shit that he witnessed by the movie's villain or protagonist, Kurt Zagon, who was played by Henry Silva. Again, like I said, plays the villain in every movie he's in. I'm pretty positive. Then he gets wrapped up in a drug bust they think it was a drug bust. It actually ends up being that they were smuggling in a bunch of illegal explosives with C4. And then he basically puts it upon himself to figure out who it is. And the CIA is telling him to back off because they have an informant, and lots of shit goes down. He's trying to protect his partner, who is played by Pam Grier, who's 8 days away from leaving the job of a police detective and becoming a district attorney. So he's protecting her. He's trying to protect his family. Sharon Stone, by the way, plays his wife. I guess I should have brought that up. Sharon Stone's in it as well. Early movie for Sharon Stone, too, if not like one of her first movies, which I'll tell you right now if it was or not. Boom, boom. Filmography. That's the wrong way. Her first movie was Police Academy 4, Citizens on Patrol. Her second movie was Above the Law. Ooh, her third movie was Total Recall. Dang, girl. You jumped right in, didn't you? Then a couple of years later, she had Basic Instinct, which made her a huge star because she showed her vagina. Not the whole vagina, it was like a shot of it, you know, shadowy image of her vagina. That's hard. That's something you don't very see too often in movies. Not in movie theater movies. Some of those movies go to theaters, but not the ones you want to be in with your kids or by yourself or at all. So he gets wrapped up in this and bad shit starts to happen, and he uncovers a bigger plot that revolves around some illegal immigrants that are held up in, as refugees in the basement of a church that his mom goes to. He then witnesses an explosion during a during mass where they're trying to blow up a certain priest who wasn't actually there at the time, but they didn't know that. So that spurs more, and it ends up being that their ultimate goal is to actually kill a senator who's going against them because them are rogue or bad agents inside the CIA, and it turns out that the CIA is kind of looking at killing a U.S. senator to get what they want because he's making it hard for them to do the bad shit they do to make the to try to make things better for themselves, I guess. It's very political, especially in the time frame, the late 80s, early 90s, because a lot of shit was going on. So that's a thing. So there's a lot of action. He plays the ultimate like 80s badass dude. He like goes through all sorts of shit and never gets really damaged. He gets a couple scrapes on his face from like glass and shit, but like he's shot at a bunch of times, never gets hit. He murders a couple people, but he does his like crazy karate and like snaps dude's wrists. At one point he takes a machete and chops a dude's hand off that's holding a gun. That shit's hilarious. Beats a bunch of dudes up. And it's that criticism that always people have is, yeah, he's good at defending one person at a time. It's true. They, in the action, the choreography, they do take, they like wait for one guy to get thrown away and then like wait for him to be ready and then he goes after it. But that's, you know, whatever. It's the 80s. And it's super awesome anyways. So yeah, that's, and he goes from there. There's like a lot of shooting and like he gets told he has to give it off. So they take his badge because he's doing the investigation illegally. So they pull him from it, but he still goes in. And then like his family gets like shot at by a hit squad. And he takes them all out. His family gets threatened. So they end up hiding with his family. He goes on a rampage and starts running through people. It's super badass. I don't regret rewatching this and talking about the show. But I do kind of wish I would have done either Marked for Death, which is the original one I wanted to do, or even, Marked for Death was the original one I wanted to do. I like that one because it's got the Haitians and stuff in it. And he chops a dude's head off and comes walking out with it like, oh, fuck you. It's super cool. I think it's super cool. Super violent. It was like in 93? No, 91, I think it was. I could look it up. It's like a click away, but it doesn't matter. But I'll do that another time. Maybe I'll do a whole month of Steven Seagal movies. Maybe not. Let's see what else about this movie. This is one of those movies where guns hold more bullets than they should. And then when they don't, it's an opportune time for someone to do something. So Zagon, the bad guy, Kurt Zagon, again, played by Henry Silva. He's known as the doctor. And he does torturing. And one of his big things is chemical torture, where he puts shit in and it makes you tell the truth, but it's excruciating. But he also like has this Bowie knife. He has this Bowie knife that when you first see him threaten a guy is backwards. So the serrated or the blade is facing himself, and the serration on the back, you know, little teeth that are used to rip and chaw and break shit. Like when you stab into somebody, the tip has got that curve to it, but it's all bladed on both sides. But as soon as it goes in, the flesh would collapse around it. And as you pull out, that does damage because it grabs a hold of like ribs and other guts and rips out with it, right? That's the idea behind it. It's also used to like break twigs and break things, leverage and stuff like that. So he's holding it, this guy, threatening the guy to cut him off and like cut him up in pieces, but he's holding the knife backwards. And I don't know if that was supposed to be that way, like, oh, I'm going to cut you with this side that doesn't have any actual, like, honed edge to it. Like, I don't think did he think that was a saw? Like, it's not bladed. Like, those ridges aren't bladed on most of those Bowie knives. They're just dull fucking metal pieces. Anyways, so it always threw me off. Like, it threw me off this time, especially because, like, I think I don't remember him doing that, but I was more conscious because I was watching it to talk about it on the show, so I was looking for details and stuff. And sure enough, man, like, has that knife backwards. It's fucking weird. Oh, the other part that threw me off too, which I'm sure I never noticed when I was younger watching it, or even like a bunch of years ago when I watched it, but when Nico's getting ready to go on his rampage, he goes to his basement in his house and he opens up what looks to be an air vent, like for air conditioning or heating and stuff, opens up the panel like it's a hidden panel, but it's the actual duct, and pulls a duffel bag out of it, right? Which, if that was in there, the heater or the air conditioner wouldn't work for shit, because that bag was taking up that entire area. Anyways, pulls it out, opens up, has all these weapons stuff in it. He pulls a pistol out, checks it for the bullet, cocks it, and it's ready to go. And then does the same thing with a shotgun, hands it to his buddy. And I'm thinking, I hope he cleans those a lot, like routinely. Because I'm no gun expert, but I'm pretty sure if you put a bunch of guns in a bag that's in an air vent of some sort, even if it's zipped up, like, dust and shit's going to get around there, right? And if someone could correct me on this. Again, I'm not a gun owner. I don't claim to know anything about guns, but I do know that big thing about guns is making sure they're clean properly. So when you do shoot them, they don't get jammed and either, you know, you get killed with a jam or it misfires and can, like, you know, bust, like, the gun can break, right? If I'm not mistaken. Maybe that's just movie logic to me. Like, a gun gets damaged, you never really see it too often, but, you know, I know if guns get jammed and they can break, almost positive. Anyways, doesn't matter. But I'd like to take this last part of the show as I wrap up. I'm going to talk about something that is relevant to not as last week's episode, but the week before, The Running Man. But I'm also here to announce that I'm going to, starting next month as part of the show, just for a fun thing, I'm going to try it out, is I'm going to do a What I'm Reading. And so what I'm going to do is the last part of the of every week's show, I'm going to do tell you what I've been reading, comic book wise and book wise. At first, maybe it's going to go on to other stuff like what I've been watching lately. Just like a personal little, like, audio blog thing, but also just tell you what I've been reading, you know, get a little insight into how I expand my mind without the drugs. Anyways, but this week I'm going to talk about a book I did read, The Running Man, which goes back to the first episode of the month, which was Arnold Schwarzenegger's The Running Man. I talked briefly about how it was an adaptation of a book by Richard Bachman / Stephen King, because that was his a pseudonym he was going by to write more books, because his publishing company didn't want to oversaturate the King name and the King brand. Anyways, so I was like, oh, I need a new book to read, because I had just finished another Stephen King book, which I'll talk about probably next week, or a week after, I think, or whatever week that is. I think it's the week after. It was the beginning of June. But I just wanted to talk about it a little bit for the people who haven't seen Running Man, but listen to my episode. I think I ruined it for you because I told you all the cool shit that happened in it. But I think you should go back and watch it. But I don't recommend reading the book first, then watching the movie, because they are drastically different. I know people say this all the time, book's better. I don't think that's true. I enjoyed the book, but for different reasons. But the movie is better, because it's more action-y. The book is very slow. It's not very action-packed until towards the end, and then it kind of fizzles out from there, if you ask me. Has a drastically different feel, different commentary. Commentary is very similar, but very more dramatic for what's going on in the book. The ending is vastly different. The characters are vastly different. The situation is vastly different, too. Yes, there's a game show where you get hunted by hunters, but the difference is you're doing it for money and prizes, but it's in a way they use it to, like in the movie, eliminate bad people, but it's more of a chance for a bad people of lower class to earn money, even though they're most likely going to die. They can earn money from their family, and Running Man is the one in the book, in that world, is where you can earn the most money for it, because you can, every day you survive and you are on the run still, you earn yourself $100. So, that it can pile up pretty good, right? Like, you know, $100 for every day. So they give you, or every hour is $100. I'm sorry, every hour is $100. Every hour on their lamb is $100. It's a tremendous amount of money you can earn, right? And obviously, it would go postmortem. It would go to your family, whoever you set up. I'm guessing for. But he, in the book, he's not a war hero or a war criminal. I think technically is what you want to call him in the movie, because he's been blackmailed as being the butcher of Bakersfield. In this, he's a poor, on the skids, out of work father whose daughter, who's 18 months old, has the flu and he needs medicine, but he can't afford it. He needs medicine and a doctor. He can't afford it. So he finally, on just the sheer, I have no other choice. And my wife, I want her to stop being a hooker, because she keeps, you know, selling her body to make money for them. Decides he's going to go to what they call the Games Corporation, which is the people who run The Running Man, as amongst other shows like Treadmill for Dollars and Swim the Crocodiles and a couple other ones they don't really give you names for. And then he's telling you about how this works, and the narrative of the story through his point of view is he believes it's all rigged, and it most for the most part is. When you go down to the games building, you wait in this long line with all these other despots, and you go through a bunch of physicals, mental tests, psychological tests, different things like that to kind of determine if, A, you can compete at all, but also where you fall in line. So if, for Treadmills for Dollars, you think, oh, someone who is in good shape would get on Treadmills for Dollars and make a fuck ton of money. That's not who they choose for that. They choose people who have, like, heart murmurs and, like, asthma, shit that can kill you if you're running for a long period of time. Those are the people who are selected for Treadmill for Dollars. Then I'm going to guess, they don't really specify, but I'm going to guess the Swim with Crocodiles are going to be people who can't swim well, probably people with breathing problems, overweight people, people with bad legs or bad arm. You know, if someone has a bum hip or something, can't swim that well, is going to get eaten by alligators. What are the rules of that one? I'm not too sure. I'm going to guess how far you can make it before you get eaten by an alligator. You make more money, I suppose. But The Running Man, and the biggest thing is, so it's not a, so in the movie, there's this blocked off area of the rundown city they use for the games. They have different areas that they run from and the different, hunters, and it's all closed circuit cameras, CCTV cameras that broadcast it to a live audience and out to the big screen out front where the people are betting on it and stuff like that. And the audience gets to choose hunters to go after them. They have the hunters, they're like Sub-Zero and Dynamo and all those ones I was telling you about, Buzzsaw, all those ones. This one is not. So in the book, it's still a game show, but it takes place in the real world. So you go and they basically release you in the real world. They give you $4,800 ahead of time, which goes against your winning. So you have to at least last 2 days. They give you a 12-hour start. You have to last 2 days to break even, and then after that you earn even more money, and the longer you last, the more money you make. And if you make it 30 days, you win and you get $1 billion and you get to go free. They don't hunt you down anymore. But the thing is, it takes place in the real world, so they release you into the actual real world with people. Now the games network, for the games corporation, they broadcast on something called the Freenet or Freevee. So it's just TV, but it's free. And it's piped to everybody, completely free of charge. As long as you have a TV, the way you watch it, you plug it in, you can watch it all day long, and it's completely free. No, there's probably ads and stuff, obviously, to get you to buy shit when you have money. But the big thing is the entertainment, right? To get you sucked into the games. And they also do a thing where the public can help out the hunters find the running men. And where they do this is, if you can positively identify the runner, And you turn them in so they can track them down somewhere, you earn money. If your tip leads to the capture or the death of the runner, then you get a bigger bonus and fame, essentially. You're going to put your face on the freebie, and that's huge for you, right? This movie is the book is very political, very social commentary, especially for back then. This was written in the 70s and based in the near to future, in the 2020 something or other. It has a lot of stuff like the pollution is overrun, overpopulation, The dollar has fractions. They have the thing called new dollars, which is a new type of currency that's essentially just currency run by the corporation, by the Games Corporation, to use as instead of regular money. Super crazy differences in the book. Spoiler for the ending, he kills himself flying a jetliner into the Games Tower, the Games Building Tower, which is a big 90-story monolith in the middle of Co-op City, as it's called, which is Co-op City is a name because it's a bunch of cities co-opted together to make one big city, Co-op City. To kill Killian, who is the producer of The Running Man, not the host like it is in the movie, like Richard Dawson plays. He's not the host of it. He's the producer of it. And he essentially flies the plane directly into Killian's office, definitely killing Killian, and then blowing up the tower himself, who was going to die anyways because he got a gut shot and his guts were hanging out and he's tripping over him. It's fucking crazy. It's a pretty drastic difference because of the way the game's set up, but also just how it happens and stuff. But it's interesting. There's no rebellion in it like there's in the movie. It's kind of crazy, but I'll do more of these as I read other books that are adaptations and talk about them more. And I'm not saying either was bad. They're both good. I liked the book. I liked the movie. I like the movie more. I think it's more entertaining and it's more ridiculous. But the book is very poignant and made to point out certain things about society and things like that. What's crazy is I've never read any of the Richard Bachman books, which are the pseudonym of Stephen King. So this is my first one, and it just happened to be Running Man, because really the only reason I started reading it is because I was talking about Running Man the other day on the show, and I thought it was like, oh, might as well read the book. It was, you know, it was only like on Kindle, it was only a couple bucks. It was like $6 or $7 or something like that. So I was like, oh, I'll read that. It's funny because like Stephen King, the whole premise, and I talked about this before, he came up with a pseudonym for Richard Bachman to write other stories for two reasons. One is he has the other stories he wants to tell, but his publisher is like, we don't want to saturate the market with the King brand, so we're not going to let you. So he went beyond that, and I don't know if they knew this or not. I don't know the whole story, but he came up with a pseudonym, and he wrote on this other name in these different books, and they were different than his other ones. His other ones are more, very much so, have spooky shit in them and ghosts and that kind of stuff. This one's more sci-fi, but like modernized sci-fi, not like flying in space, but like automated everything and like flying, like they call them air cars. They float a little bit above the ground, but they're just, they don't like fly in the air like Blade Runner does. It'll fly just above them. It's a luxury item versus a gas car because gas is very expensive. But air, you can get filled up pretty cheap because it's air. Sort of things like that. But he links this he's very, if you don't know, Stephen King's books are all linked in the same universe called, a lot of people call it the Kingdom, or the King universe. I think I'm the only person that calls it the Kingdom. Anyways, the King universe, things like staples like Derry, Maine, are a huge thing because it takes place, like It takes place there. Dr. Sleep talks about it, which is the sequel to The Shining that I just got done reading, which I'll talk about next month. There's a lot of different things, like a lot of recurring characters. This one I didn't recognize any recurring characters in, but he mentions Derry, Maine. He actually goes to Derry, Maine and flies out from Derry, Maine. And Derry, Maine's a fictional place. It doesn't exist, except for in Stephen King's universe, the Kingverse or the Kingdom. So it's interesting to see that. I wonder if he did that for his clever, because I don't know, I could look this up and I'll probably do more research on it, but I don't know how early this was in the Richard Bachman book series, like in the ones he was doing. But I do know that it was supposed to be separate. It wasn't supposed to be away from, so his fans didn't just buy it for buying. The other reason he was by the pseudonym is because he wanted to see if he could write other types of stories that weren't like his other ones he already had out. So it's interesting to me to hear the words, like the names like Derry, Maine talked about, because it is a fictional place that he uses a lot in his books, in a lot of his books. So it's a very interesting thing to see, and I was wondering if that was a conscious decision, or he was so used to writing about Derry, Maine, it was like, oh, I just need a place, you know, in that area that I don't want to point a bad light at or something, because I can make light of how terrible a place Derry is because it doesn't exist. But so it's interesting to see how he did that. But anyways, that's it for this week's episode of The Awesome with Cody. We were talking about Above the Law, as well as the book The Running Man. So look forward to my new addition to the show starting next month, which is in 2 weeks. I want to tell you the theme yet for that month. It is not what I'm reading. Actually, it has nothing to do with what I'm reading. It's just a little more to add on to the show. Plus, a lot of people have always asked me, a lot of my friends and stuff, like, oh, what have you been reading lately? So this would be a good way for my friends who listen to the show, but also the my new friends and strangers that have come to the show to learn a little more about me and what I've been reading lately, and just, you know, kind of expand on what's going on here. But anyways, that's it for this week's episode of The Awesome with Cody. Again, I am Cody, and as usual, let's be awesome.